This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Hello, I'm Scott Soshnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Spider-Man on Gasoline Alley sports business podcast, The Sporticast.
All right. Elio Castroneves, thank you for joining us. We always rate Eben's open. So the Spider-Man on Gasoline Alley, my interpretation there, he tried to do too much.
It was too much. But it's funny, when you say hello, you know, a lot of people call me Helio, Julio, hello.
And oh, you thought hello was Elio.
I was like, hello, you know, because people sometimes does know how to pronounce my name. And let me teach you how it is. It's very simple.
Please.
If you spell Leo fast, L-E-O.
Elio.
That's how you spell.
Now, is that universal? Have you ever met anybody who quickly spelled Leo and it sounded nothing like Elio?
No, not really.
Right. It would have been me, by the way.
It's true.
I'd have been like Leo.
Leo. It's funny because when I heard that, it was like, "Are you sure?" Yeah. Then people were starting to say, "You guys told me this. Okay, I'll continue pass it along."
So that wasn't you. Somebody told you how to tell other people.
It was actually the president of Team Penske, was Sindrick, Tim Sindrick. He's like, "Hey, if they spell Leo fast, they're going to say your name correct." I was like, all right, so I'll tell everyone from now on.
And speaking as someone whose my name gets mispronounced all the time, I have also settled on the right way to tell people.
Right.
So this is the effective way. I'm going to do it that
but
way.
But at the end of the day,
Eben. I say Eben. It's like Ebenezer without the Ezer. And that's the way people pick it up, right? Because other people hear Evan, it's always very confusing.
Evan gets complicated. Yeah.
Dare I do the embarrassing for me? I mean, not a lot of people don't
Scott,
know this.
Yeah, tough.
Everybody knows it professionally. 30 years later, Scott Sasha. Everybody, my real first name. I was named after my grandfather, who died shortly before I was born. My given first name is Irving.
Irving.
It's Irving Scott Soshnick.
Okay.
But Irving, I mean Irv Scott. I've written under pen name Irv Scott, which I think is pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
But anyway,
Scott,
I thought you
so
tried
so simple, Scott, man.
Right, it's Irving like Scott, Scott it's actually, like Scott, but Scott.
There was a twist, Irving Scott. I like that.
You want me to go Irving Scott?
I think you should start all of the interview.
Elio says I should go Irving Scott. And I don't want to leave Evan out. Pero si quieres hacerlo en español.
Hacemos.
Say, hacemos.
Sin problema.
All right, you can leave, Evan. You don't have to do this.
Un poco. Comprendo un poco.
All right, so how cool is this spot? This is my first time here.
Okay.
I have heard from
really
many people.
Wow.
I've been to Indiana many times,
okay.
Pacers, Super Bowls. I have not been here, but I hear from people, coolest event, got to do it, must see. You've been all around the world. You've seen it all. Where does this rank?
It's, if you have a bucket list, which I believe a lot of majority of people, normal people have, this place, it should be on it. I mean, talking about just the trophy itself. If you've seen the BorgWarner trophy, it's a huge trophy with a lot of faces of the winners, which is really cool and different. And when they started this race, if you know a little bit about the history of this place or not, it wasn't only a three-hour race. It was about 8, 9, 10 hour race. Back then, 500 miles, it was a long way, right? And they actually the driver used to go with the mechanic because the cars weren't able to finish, so they have to fix during the race and continue. So one of actually the faces on the trophy has two faces, which is the driver and the mechanic. Mm. So if you're thinking about, this is the 107th edition of this place, over 100 years old, this race is still going and going the way it is. It just show how special it is. I mean, it's not only for the drivers, but for each spectator out there and the fans, their grandfather used to come over here and brought their father. Now the kids are bringing their kids, you know, so it's generations of generation, and that's why it's so special.
Do you see Eben preparing to go? And we've been doing this so long. See how I jumped in there? I don't want him to get the good portion, because we just learned our producer, Cor Veltman, knows everything about this place. He's talking about history. Were you going to go there?
You're saying the thing I was going to say.
You know what? I'm going to be nice today.
Okay.
And by the way, I'm also driving him to the airport after this, even though I need to drive to Nashville.
Not 200 miles an hour.
I have a 4.5-hour drive to Nashville, but I'm going to take him to the airport first. You go ahead and take away what we learned about the history of this place.
Just learned, and I don't know if the mechanic is this part, but the first rear view mirror in a car was developed here 1911, exactly. I believe, if that date is right.
That's correct.
And essentially it was to take the second person out of the car.
That's
that person's job was to look behind the car, and smart person realized you could do that with a tiny piece of glass.
No, and not only that, I mean, when they achieved the first 200 miles, now we're 235 miles. I mean, thinking about it, you know, back then the innovation of the cars coming over here and what design they're going to have and things like that. That's the cool thing about history in this place. So I call the temple of racing, because it is. It is something so special. And all, I'm talking about all the champions of the entire world of race car drivers being here before, try to accomplish this.
I was telling Scott when we landed, it feels like the Super Bowl. You land,
it
the
is.
Airport's already decked out.
It
there's
is.
Pop-up shops around town. There's signs on the buildings, the whole thing. If the Super Bowl was in the same place every year,
that's true.
You would get kind of this vibe,
correct.
I think. Yeah,
that is correct.
All right, Eben. I mean, this is a little-known fact, and Corey, help me out if I'm wrong on this one, but it is the temple of racing. You said, I've been told you were bar mitzvahed here. is that not correct?
Little known fact.
Castro Nevis was bar mitzvahed.
I don't have a brick. You're right. Now I'm very honored to have my brick cemented into this place, which is I still. It didn't sink yet, so one day will, but not right now. It's still not in my.
So you've run this race four times. Is the ring? Is that a championship ring? What is the?
Yeah, that's the Indy 500, the last one, the 2021.
It's not as gaudy as other championship rings, like the football players and the basketball players. They're like 2-pound rings.
Well, another history of that.
I love
it. It's interesting. Herb Jones has the rights to build the ring for the winner.
Sure.
Okay, and they do build this really big ring, by the way. And however, the person that started this tradition, this design of the ring, he's no longer here anymore, but his son kept the mold. And all the gods of racing, which I call the AJ Foyt, Rick Mears, Alan Sr., Mario Andretti, all these amazing, incredible drivers, John Rutherford, Ari Lowndyke, they use this mold, this one. So when I came over here in America, I always admired those rings, and I'm like, man, one day I want to wear it. However, Herb Jones does not make that ring, but this guy have the mold. So he actually contacted me and said, hey, I would love for you to wear what my father designed. He's no longer here anymore. Would it be part of history? And I was like, deal. And
right. That's so talking about
perfect
history.
Perfect phone call, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Know, exactly the phone call you wanted, right?
But talking about history, we have sources, as you know. Journalists have sources. Sources tell us that your Dancing with the Stars trophy used to have a very prominent position in your bachelor pack.
Perhaps more prominent than before.
And then one became trophies. Two. Where is that trophy now?
It's still right there beside of the four Indy 500 champion trophy. I mean, the reason why, and there is an explanation, yes.
There's always an explanation.
There is an explanation. I worked too darn hard to win that Mirrorball trophy, okay? It was not in my ability. I did not know I was able to do what I did. I have to thank Julianne Hough, obviously, because she was my partner. She did all the job, and I just followed her lead. And, man, that's how you say a teamwork, because it was incredible. It was a great event, a great show, and I still very much I love it.
I'm sure you get asked this all the time. When you get recognized on the street, is it more often Elio the driver? Is it Elio dancer? What happens more often?
Up to 10, because it's been quite a 2007 when I won, by the way. And up to 5-6 years later, people are like, are you the dancer that can drive a race car? I'm like, no, it's the opposite. It's I drive a race car, and I was able to dance, but it was great. It was a lot of fun.
But let's bring it around to what we do, though, the business of sport. Okay. You were ahead of, pardon the pun here, you were ahead of the curve. Sports is entertainment. It battles the, whether it's a movie or sports is entertainment. You brought the two worlds together, and now you see leagues, players, teams trying to catch up and do the same on a macro level. Where do you see the worlds of sport and entertainment coming together as business?
It's today. I mean, how many times we see so many commercials, you know, with incredible athletes being part of it, and they don't hire models like they used to be, you know, to be the face of their advertising, their product, because athletes and sports figures became taking that space. I was very fortunate to have a great group of people around me that say, hey, why don't you do it? Because it's going to be good for you. I wasn't thinking about that. I was like, you know what? I want to have a good time. It's my vacation. And it was great. You're right. Today, so many people, hey, my wife loves you from Dancing with the Stars. But my husband or I love you from racing. So it's a great combination, and it's going to continue on that direction.
Years ago, the saying was, athletes want to be rock stars. Rock stars want to be athletes. Now, I mean, you may be behind on this. I'm not sure. Do you have a production studio? And if not, Elio, you got to get on it. You're way behind.
I don't know.
Athletes
have production studios. I need to talk to you guys. Let's talk about, right?
That's what we do.
This is something we're starting right here in Sportico, right? So watch out.
Yeah, it's funny. There's so much right now for sports. I think Indy 500 would fit, and IndyCar would fit so well in this, in the produced documentary world. F1, obviously, so documented. The boost that they got from
are you jealous? Come on, are you jealous? Are you Drive to Survive? Give me.
Did you watch it? No, I did. And by the way, incredible, right? They did an incredible job. Now IndyCar has the same version on the CW channel with Vice. But you're absolutely right. These guys, they went to a place that nobody could see it. And now everybody's able to see it. And now it's not about the driver or the race, let's put it this way. It's about the people inside, the team principal, the driver, the mechanics, the sponsors. You know, all of a sudden, it is a movie. You know, you want to see what's happening, and very smart what they did.
I think fans just want access, right? They want
access.
They want not just the cars going quickly, but they want to be in Gasoline Alley. I'm going to say it again. We're sitting right over it. They want to see the car on the lift, and they want to see what's underneath it.
They
want to
be
see
where
what you're doing on Friday and Thursday, getting ready. There's so many things that for a long time were not included in the consumption of sports like the Indy 500 and IndyCar that are now suddenly becoming table stakes, I think, for doing it.
Yeah. Well, you wonder why, like, the Osbournes works. Who didn't sit going, I wonder what it's like to be Ozzy's kid? And they take it behind. But years ago, it was MTV Cribs. You went behind the scenes. What do people want to know about you, and how do you capitalize? What more can you do? How much more of you can you share? How do you make yourself the centerpiece of a much larger global business?
Well, you have to be, in the end of the day, also, there is secrets that you cannot expose, because the competitors have the same car, the same engine, the same tires. Now, there is restrictions that you actually can do. In Formula One case, for example, you build your own car. So, and as well, I'm sure there is a fine area that you're not allowed to show. But just on top of that, you know, the Kardashians, it was the same thing. So they becoming, today, they're incredible billionaires, you know, because they were able to take that advantage. A lot of people making fun of it. But look what happens, you know, they capitalize on the entire business side, and now they're
Do you see the younger racers understanding that from
Absolutely.
Day one, that there's more they can do?
Which what we have social media now, you know, so many ones start to doing stuff, and you got to be careful, by the way. You got to be really careful, because you can expose yourself and put yourself in a bad situation as well. And that's when things go bad. So you gotta know the fine line from that.
Was there a point in your career, maybe it's the social media, was there a moment where you said, oh, I actually do need to be doing a lot more of this stuff than maybe I thought about when I was 21 years old driving?
I was sponsored by a cigarette, Philip Morris. So for us...
Winston Cup.
Exactly, Winston Cup, but mine was Marlboro. And what happened is, if you see some of the pictures here at the Pagoda, you're going to see the Marlboro colors, but without name, because we're not allowed to expose that. So mine was a little, we actually had to find ways back then to expose herself without exposing, which was very hard, and depended on the age group and things like that. So it was a very niche. In fact, when I did Dancing with the Stars, because it was so abroad, they couldn't relate anything to racing in that particular situation, because that would conflict with all they have. Yeah. So back then was, as you mentioned, because we didn't have Google or Instagram or even whatever, Facebook, all this social media, it was a little easier and harder for you to keep it going in those terms.
You know? One other thing we see a lot of in athletes in other sports, and there's a history in racing as well, is star athletes turning into ownership later
right
in their career.
That's right, where I was going. My God,
or afterwards. Look in the crystal ball for you, and you're not done racing yet, obviously.
But no, but you're right.
Is team ownership in IndyCar or somewhere else?
But this is where I got to jump in. You're not looking in the crystal ball. You're looking in the mirror ball. When you look in the mirror ball, what does it see? That reminds you, my God, I've been doing this a really long time.
For sure not dancing. I'm telling you that. I'm not. That I hang a long time ago, my shoe.
Michael Jordan went from player to owner. And he said, looking back as a player, I would have told that guy to shut up. He didn't know what he was talking about. It's a different thing.
It's a different. You're right. I do see myself on that. The reason is, I spent my entire life in this sort of, you know, in this sport, in this environment, and I love to give back a little bit what I learned in the past and trying to, especially with this team. My MSR is a phenomenal team. It's a young team. This is our third year together. I would love to be part of it. I push with them, but if it not happen, understanding, because it's all about business. And I do see myself doing something like that.
Quickly then, macro level, there's F1, there's Indy, there's NASCAR. Do they help each other? Are they fighting each other? Are they fracturing the audience? Can they work together? Hierarchy, and how would you like to see it go?
I think when Roger became owner of IndyCar, Roger Penske, he is be able to, because the amount of respect that this incredible person have with the whole community, not only on the business side, but in the racing side, it made people like, okay, we're not here to compete against each other. We can actually generate everyone in the same way, in the same place.
Do they believe that? Do they say that publicly, and then they go back and they say, I want to rip your throat out?
I do believe that they can do that, especially Formula One. Now you see so many benefits from the Drive to Survive to everyone. Everyone thinks that I race Formula One. Mm. You know, they have no idea. But because Formula One became so much, so everybody's helping each other. As long as you embrace that and make things happen. So I believe NASCAR, IndyCar here in America, and even Formula One, there was plenty of space for everyone to enjoy it and have fun.
I got a dumb final question for you. I read every driver gets to choose his own milk in case he wins this week. 28 of the drivers chose whole milk. You're one of the few that did not, 2% milk. What goes into that decision? Is it easier going down the gullet when you're chugging it? What's the
I like milk, but I always drink. I always chose 2%.
I'm with you.
I'll keep it 2%, and if they have almond milk, I'll do it. Last year, I actually had a strawberry powder, you know, and last year 2021, and I told them, bring the pink powder. They're like, pink powder? What are you talking about? But actually, we mix it up with the milk. I drink.
Wait. You mean to tell me, and I know we're a little over here, but you did pink powder, you're talking about it, and you didn't get a sponsorship for it? You didn't get paid to do the pink powder?
Hold on. AutoNation.
Elio Castro AutoNation. By quick.
The reason that we did it was because the pink collars for AutoNation, we actually drive the awareness for the breast cancer. So that's why. Turned out to be great. Hopefully we can do that. And you're right. What was the Nestle? Is that Nestle?
Nestle Quick. Yeah, Nestle Quick.
We should have that. We should have
done that too.
Absolutely. Let's talk about later after the show.
I've got plenty of ideas. But speaking of ideas, Elio Castro Neves, thanks so much. We are going to bring on next Doug Bowles, the president of the Speedway. We're going to ask, the first question will be yours. What's the first question you would have for him?
For him?
For him.
Where's going to be my next street over here in the Speedway?
We will ask him.
Please.
Elio, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we are with Doug Bowles, president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
I got to tell you, Doug, the lingo of the Indy 500, I am all about it now. Learning about the snake pit and carb day and gasoline alley, I'm all in on this.
Well, you know, I just came from being in the snake pit with Roger Penske as we started looking at everything. He's into every detail, and music isn't exactly his strong suit, everything racing-wise. So we're going through and asking all the questions about the stage build and the LED and where the artists are and how does it all work through. So the snake pit's a big piece of it. it, and certainly one of those terms has been around since the late 60s.
Did you find folks like Roger, and I do, other successful people, we worked for Mike Bloomberg, they know the details.
It's unbelievable what he knows, and not just the details of the Speedway, but all the car dealerships he owns around the world, all the businesses he owns, he knows all the details. He can tell you, hey, last week you said you were going to spend $550 on this. Did you end up spending $550, or were you able to save some money? I mean, he just really understands every single element of it. It's what makes him so successful.
You will appreciate this. You know, David Stern, after the NBA, he started a business, an investment firm. It was called Micromanagement Ventures. David ruled with two principles, micromanagement and fear. The worst thing that could happen to an NBA employee would be to wait at the elevator. Ding! Door opens, and there's David. Because you were going to get grilled, whether you had 15 floors to go or two, you were going to get grilled, and David knew the numbers.
Well, and Roger knows the numbers, and it's the same situation with Roger. He's going to ask you questions, but Roger isn't a micromanager. It's really weird to say. What Roger is really, he's going to outwork everyone, and he's going to out-detail you. And what he really, what I've found it is in the last 3 years with him, it's really more about having a partner who cares as much about the business as the people that are on the ground. So he's walking alongside you and saying, well, why aren't we doing this? Can I help you get to this point? So it isn't micromanagement. It's, here's the guy, loves the passion, wants you to do well, and how can he walk alongside you and make you better? And you do have to be prepared to answer the
question.
So let me,
if I'm pointing at Roger, it's ideation. I'm pointing at you, it's execution.
Yeah, or he allows us to ideate too. So that's the great thing about Roger, is he'll include the entire staff. So you could walk along on a campus visit and looking at things, and you may have your ticketing person and your facilities person and your hospitality person, and you could be talking about something that plumbing related, and he'll look at the ticketing person and say, Kelly, who's our head of ticketing, what do you think about these toilets, or what do you think about putting the sink over here, or what about this mirror? He wants everybody involved in to feel like they don't just own their lane, they own everything.
Ebony, you know, you were there. This resonates with me so much. When Mike came back first day back, he said the water in the bathroom runs too long, the automatic. Well, he said, it's no, and I don't like the placement of the paper towels.
Dispenser.
I couldn't find it easily. Yep. It's amazing. By the way, I feel bad. We lied to Elio. We said we were going to start I know. I feel bad. We lied to Elio. Hopefully people are listening to the start of this show. They'll know what we talk about. You want to get into it. You get into where we were going.
We just had Elio on, and at the end we said, we have Doug coming on next. What's the first question we should ask him? And he thought for a second, and he said, The streets downtown named after drivers. Yeah. I want better placement.
He's not happy.
Next year, what do I have to do to get better placement there?
So Elio is maybe the best driver ambassador we have for the Indianapolis 500. Obviously a four-time winner. And he cares about where the signs are and where he is. So after he won his fourth Indy 500, we were signing some things and sending some stuff to some of our suite holders as thank yous for participating as part of the year. And I said, hey, Elio, would you mind signing some stuff for us? And he paused for a minute. I'm on the phone. He said, well, yeah, but I need you to do something for me first. I thought, this guy's going to ask me to pay him for autographs. And so I was like taken aback. And really,
that was my suggestion to him.
Well, he said, you know, I've been here a long time. I look around and all these drivers have something named after them. There's nothing Castor Nevis anywhere. You need to name something after me. So the first IndyCar test at Texas Motor Speedway in 2022, I get a selfie from Elio. He's hanging out his car, going under the tunnel there, and behind him, the tunnel's named Jimmy Johnson Tunnel. And he said, see, even Jimmy Johnson has something named after him at Texas. So we named renamed 4th Street here for Elio Castroneves. So it's now Castroneves Street. So the 4th Street is the 4th four-time winner, and that street's named after him. And now he said if he wins the 5th, he wants something else. So I'm not surprised he wants his sign somewhere else downtown.
If I'm using my Waze to get around, it says Castroneves, or is it going to give me
one
for
it? It'd be interesting on Waze where it actually takes you, because all of our streets have been named after somebody. 5th Street still isn't named, so Elio says, once I win my 5th, I want you to rename 5th as well for me.
I think he would be the first five-time winner. You can negotiate an IndyCar setting on Waze for Indianapolis. I think that's the way to go.
I love that idea, actually. I think it'd be really cool, because we have Foyt, we have Shaw, we have Mears, we have Unser, two Unsers. I mean, it's all our names are here.
Ideation.
Execution. There you go.
I thought Scott was going to ask for one for himself.
Not yet.
The first street
after
could be
the show,
Scott Soshnick Street.
Let me do something first. You know, I'm looking around here. Yep. I mean, for people who are not familiar, golf holes are inside the track. There's a big debate going on in sport, macro level, about at home versus at facility. People, let's say NFL, NBA, people are like, I'd rather just be home. I have my bathroom. It's almost as good. The experience, at-home experience is almost as good as being there. It doesn't work here.
So that's the one place where it doesn't really work for us. I mean, what makes this race so special is the electricity that 300,000+ fans bring to it on race day. So we need that 300,000+ folks here. And 70% of them don't watch another race the rest of the year. So it's not that they don't attend one. They don't even watch another race the rest of the year. It's all about the event. So it is that experience you have to experience. And people always say, well, how do you describe it? And you really can't. And the best way I can describe it is, you know, when you're watching that beautiful sunset and you take a picture on your phone and because you're like, I got to share this with my friends. And we look at it, you go, it doesn't work. It's exactly like this place. I can take a picture. You can see the video. You can see 33 cars coming down the front stretch with 300,000 people around. And it's cool. But you can't really explain it unless you're here.
Doug, can I just... That was an unbelievable analogy because it applies to everybody. We've all taken, like, look at this sunset and, like, it doesn't look like anything.
Right, and you're going to share it to somebody and they're going to go, yeah, it's a sunset. And you're like, no, it's magical. And that's what this place is.
There's so much that other sports are doing that it seems like you guys have been doing for a while. Concerts around the week of the event, right? College football games
are figuring
out during the event, right? I just learned that Shaq's going to be spinning tunes while people are running around the track.
300,000 people watching the race and 20 to 25,000 young adults under the age of 30 partying in the infield while a race is going on around them. It's our best marketing tool we have for a young adult under the age of 30. I mean, it really is a great experience.
And that seems like where so much of this industry is going, right? Football games, college football games that are playing in racing stadiums around the South and also trying to have big concerts the day before or the day after. Building this around not just the race, obviously, but all these other ancillary things feels like it is the way, exactly as you're talking about, to get people here as opposed to wanting to follow it at home.
So when Roger bought the Speedway, his experience here really was from a race fan and a team owner, right? So he would come in, he'd go to his motorhome, he'd go to the garage or the pit area, 18 times he'd go to Victory Lane, but then he'd go back. So his experience totally was the racing side. But so many of the folks that come here, it's the event that makes it so special. So I worked through a big, long white paper for him of all the things that aren't racing that make the Indy 500 special. And it really is, those elements are, if not more important, there is at least as important as what happens on the track.
So give us some numbers if you can. You mentioned 300,000+ people are going to be here on Sunday. I imagine merchandise, concessions, all those things are pretty bonkers. That's three times a Michigan football home game.
I would charge a quarter for the toilet,
right?
Just saying.
Scott's going to monetize
every
single thing here.
So that, you know, you talk about that. There's a lot of stuff we could monetize that we don't. So for example, you look at a lot of racetracks and their entire race walls are monetized with stickers. You've got racetracks that have big billboards all around them. So for us, it's a balancing act. We want to monetize what we can, but we also want people to walk in and go, you know what, this place is special. It's not going to have an advertising sticker on everything here. So that's really important to us. There's a lot of opportunity that we could probably take advantage of that we don't feel fits what the brand is about. But it is 300,000+ people here. We do allow people to bring coolers, so our concession number could probably be a lot higher. But what we want is we want families to be able to come and to afford it. So if you think about a Super Bowl ticket or the front row of an NBA game ticket, our highest price ticket in the venue is right behind us over our shoulder there, and it's $250 for the best seat in the house. And you can get in the house for $40, and everybody 15 and under is free if you buy a GA ticket. So for us, it's so much about that family experience and keeping that number at 300,000.
So in 1909, when it was open, there were how many luxury suites, and was that 5G or 4G then?
Yeah, that's, you know, what's funny though, you say that, they built a track to test the new technology of the day, which was the automobile. And I sit and think, if Carl Fisher, who founded the Speedway in 1909, if he was here today, he'd say, I get it. You're not the technology. There's some on the cars, but the 5G and all the different things we're doing here today is testing the new technology of the day at the Speedway. So we're the largest sporting complex, 5G sporting complex in the world, and that is testing that new technology with those 300,000+ people here race day.
I actually was going to ask you, obviously a huge event that happens here every year, on the other 300 and, let's take May out, so on the other 330 days of the year, what is happening here from a business standpoint? Is it monetized? What happens at this track outside of the Indy 500?
So 150 days a year, there's something going on track. So obviously we're known for the Indianapolis 500, so we'll have Chevrolet days, BMW days, Lamborghini days, people that are out testing cars, bringing in their best clients and running cars on our racetrack. We have a lot of other racing series that are here. The next biggest race is obviously our NASCAR weekend, and that's in the 60,000 range shows up. 60,000 people in a 235,000 seat arena feels like no one, right? But it's as big as an NFL football game. So this is the anchor for an industry in our central Indiana area that's over a $1 billion industry to the state of Indiana. And just in May alone, we're in the $400+ million economic impact that this facility drives for our community.
In the alternate reality that is this podcast, you know, Elio had his bar mitzvah here, by the way. We determined that in the first part of the segment. There are bar mitzvahs at Lambeau Field, so I guess it's limitless. What are some of the proposals that you've seen to use the facility we haven't done yet?
No, we get all those. We're trying to stay out of the wedding business. We stay out of the bar mitzvah business. It really isn't what we're about. And oftentimes, putting on a wedding for a bride or a bar mitzvah for a family is a lot more stressful than putting on an event for 300,000 people, because that's their one moment a year. You don't want to screw up a bride's wedding, and so that the amount of time you put in for the actual revenue you could make. So we really stay out of the business. We did have one wedding here in the last year and a half, but it was for the police chief, and he asked if he could get married here. We thought, oh, this is the police chief, we're going to let him get married here.
Make some allowances.
And it was only 30 people, and it was a second marriage, so that wasn't, you know, all the things that go along with the first marriage. But it really is about how do you use the track to monetize things, and then beyond that, it's about how do we use the track to give back to the community. So in the pandemic, we had over 100,000 people come through here and get their COVID shot. We allowed high schools to graduate here. We allowed a funeral to take place for a police officer when they couldn't all get together and gather. We still allow the local high school to have their senior photo here. We do a lot of fundraisers here for foundations and others. So we try and use the facility in a way that helps the community as well.
The Indianapolis 500, the Motor Speedway, these are big brands. These are global brands. When we talk about sport these days, we talk about the team as the centerpiece of global platform companies. It's tech, it's real estate, it's media, it's finance. Where are we going? What more can we expect from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? How do we utilize the Indy 500 to further all of those tentpoles?
Well, I think not unlike all other sports venues, the customer experience is what we're trying to focus on. And how do you use new technology that we may be used to in everyday life and make it part of what's going on here at the facility? So NTT is the IndyCar Series title sponsor. They're helping us figure out how we make our customers' experience better here. So how are we monitoring gates so we can tell customers that gate doesn't work, but 100 yards from you is a gate that you can get in 3 minutes instead of 10.
No bathroom wait, ingress, egress,
exactly.
All those.
So, and we're actually piloting this year some of the bathroom and concession wait. We're not going to make it public. We want to understand how that works. So there's a lot of that piece that really relates to that. But then from the motorsport standpoint, I think we have to continue to figure out how do you take the platform of racing in a world where kids today don't get their license at 16, an awful lot of them. The car isn't the same as it was when I grew up.
So I got four syllables for you that I've seen work on kids. I use my 13-year-old as the focus group of one. Simulator.
So, and for sure, we've got that, right? So how do you continue to connect that and then draw that connection to the sport itself? And how do you take these drivers who essentially are simulator drivers in real life, you know, how do they continue to connect and draw people into our sport?
We asked this question to Elio, and I'm curious to get your thoughts. Also, there's a lot of competition in the racing world, right? F1 is doing more in the U.S. than it ever has. Yep. IndyCar, NASCAR, SRX. Do you view everybody as a competitor? Is it winner take all, zero-sum game? How do you think about all of those businesses and the popularity kind of between them as racing fans?
So I'm the promoter of a facility that has a NASCAR and an IndyCar race, but I'm an IndyCar fan at heart, right? I think at some level it is all the tide helps all boats. Now, when you have somebody that's coming in and trying to steal your mark, greatest spectacle in racing, we've had a little bit of a dispute with our friends at Liberty and Formula One who are trying to mess with our mark, but I want them to be successful. I want NASCAR to be successful. SRX is a great thing, right? Because it's the middle of the week and it engages fans. I built a short track here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway because I wanted to connect to short track fans. If some part of the sport is growing, I think it helps us all. So I think at some level, yeah, we compete, but at a larger level, we need to support each other and try and make sure that we're engaging as many people as we can in the sport.
What do you think about IndyCar's potential international opportunity? As I understand it, all the races are in North America right now. I know there's been talk about maybe expanding a little bit. What do you think about that?
I honestly like the idea of expanding internationally. We are, at our core, a North American sport, and I think we always will be. But there have been days I've been to the IndyCar race in Japan. I've been when we've gone to Brazil. I love when we get out of our comfort zone, if you will. So in our starting field, we have 33 drivers in our starting field. 21 of them are from somewhere other than the United States, right? And they represent 14 different countries. That, to me, is what this series is about. It is an international series. Frankly, it's the only one that allows drivers to test on a whole bunch of disciplines. And that's why I think the champion of the NTT IndyCar series is the greatest race car driver in the world, because they have to be so flexible in all the different series or the disciplines they have to run.
All right, Doug, we're going to cut it here, but I want to leave you wanting more. A little bit jealous of some of the things we've done. Just a little factoid about myself. I was a gopher for for the Rolling Stones Steel Wheels Tour, 1988-89. Literally, first half of the summer, hanging with the crew, putting the stage up and down, and then with the band, and I didn't know. And you should have Coleman's Wet English Mustard if you're ever with Mick Jagger, because he will not have a sandwich without it. So I just heard you were a Stones fan.
We had the Rolling Stones here on July 4th in 2015, and I got a chance to meet Mick Jagger. It was one of the cooler things I've ever gotten to do in my life. He was a super great guy, and he said, hey, is it true that you're going to have 55,000 people here tomorrow night? I met him the night before. I said, yes, sir, it is. And he said, is it true you've never held a standalone concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? I said, yes, sir. And he said, those are the two reasons why we're here. And the chills, it was like really cool to get a chance to meet him, and I do love him, and I do love the concert side. That's why I love having concerts here, and it, both whether you're the production side or on the management side, it's a lot of fun.
All right, Doug Bowles, president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to. Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.